Okay, many years ago, we were down at the Stag, which is down by Newport Pier, and we lived in West Newport, down on the oceanfront. And we were at the Stag, and the bar, having a few.
Right next to Disneyland.
So we're, you know, got kind of late, and we decided, you know, let's go home. And Jarrett was having a good time, so we everyone left, and they just left Jarrett. And no, hey, heck with Jarrett, leave him there.
They put our trunks on, that
would be. You know. So we left, and the next day Jarrett was nowhere in sight. He comes straggling in later, and tells us this story. You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, there.
Well dressed.
They want him to leave, and he, you know, no one's there to take him home, so he starts walking home, and he's kind of drunk, and he's getting real tired. So there was a market basket there, and they had one of these Goodwill houses with a little flap door where you throw all your stuff, and he crawled in there. Next morning, he wakes up, oh, where am I? You know, he sees this little line where the flap door is, a little light, and he opens the door and he sticks his head out, and these two little old ladies are on their way to the market with their shopping carts. And he looks around and he looks around. It ain't much, but I call it home.
Got out with a pair of good shoes on. All ready to roll again. That is a very exceptional organization. That South Asian Army really has a lot of respect for it.
I do too. Don't worry about it. The you think I'll
finish? No, it's still there.
I've never quite understood what they did. But like I made the, you know, Los Angeles at that rescue mission. Oh yeah, sure, man. That's on the way to Rincon, you know.
Yeah.
Up in there.
Rincon's a surfing spot.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to always hit, you know, all those places like that. And those people were just super nice, and they never were overly like religious. I don't know what they did, and then they ran all those stores all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just really nice.
They knew you were wayward.
I had a real heavy experience with it.
You got yourself?
Yeah. I think, you know, wherever in the first year I was pretty
good. Right?
Oh, no, but I got to tell this one. I picked this girl up. I was acting captain that day and went on a call, and she was a... She was an attractive blonde. And was,
he says, I have this little girl I'm bringing home. I'm expecting a six-year-old. We should have a 26-year-old blonde.
I really was thinking about helping her out because she was she's an alcoholic, and she seemed much too young to do that. And we talked to her and asked her if anybody really ever helped her. No, no one really helped me. That's, you know, been on one detox for after another. And I said, well, what about Jesus Christ? And I was really enthusiastic about that, and she just, hey, Mom, what'd you say? You know, and yes, she's had somebody trying to share with her before because she really was just took right to it. And so, and she said I could really be helped. So I had her address. The next day, I went and to our house and shared with her. You know, see if I can help her out. You know, no one helps. And I really felt like I should do something. If I really believe in, if I'm a Christian, I should do something. I should help these people. Anyway, so I got talking to her, and I prayed with her, and she asked Christ in her heart and asked, you know, forgive her sins and go ahead. And she wanted to make a new start. And I was elated because, you know, she just, real easy, and it was, you know, but it was that, and I had a thing about thinking, well, I'll do it, and you're happy up in the room, you know, but she went into her house, and then in her bedroom, started packing her bags, came into her mom's house.
So, she's buying her deal, or?
Yeah. Where are you going? He said, well, you know, Aubrey can't stay here. Oh, my God. You know, what are you going to do? You know?
Yeah.
Then you start praying.
Yeah.
Everything starts switching around.
Oh, yeah. So I said, she was packing. I said, well, once you unpack, and I told her mom, I said, let me go talk to my wife first, you know, and find where we should take her. You know, because she says, obviously, can't stay here, I'll just bring her in. And so I wanted to keep me just get out of school. And there's that girl, I told her, by and saw, oh, yeah. And she says, Well, I've asked her to, you know, anyway, share with her few strange kinds. I said, I'm going to bring her home for the weekend. I got to work and stay with you. She just turned white. Turned around to all the teachers and said, guess what the dummy did now, you know? Oh, gee. I love it. And so we really didn't agree on it. And we just really didn't agree on it.
Well, Melanie would have understood.
Lay down and rest. You're a nice guy.
Yeah.
You're a real nice guy.
So, listen, we told our moms, wait a minute, we'll go work this out anyway. And so we went down to Calgary and jumped in and asked, what's that dude? And he talked to him, well, there's a couple of houses you can take him. So, anyway, I went ahead and we went to the House of Psalms and asked him about taking the show. And they agreed, and we went back and got her and took her over there. And that seemed to solve the whole thing. But we, on the way back home, they sound like a commune. The guys live together, and the guys go out and work on a date, and the girls take care of them, they get food there, and there's about 30 people. And they all kind of pitch in whatever they have. You know? And I said, I should give them some money to help feed her, so they're just not going to be able to do anything for a while. And so I said, well, we got our checkbook here, and we had the car and getting our brakes fixed. And I had, I knew it could cost about $80 to fix that, the brakes. So, Lord, whatever you want, less than $80, I'll get the house. I want to get the car on the way. It's only $3. And so, like, just even $50, I'll get them. So, I went ahead and, you know, and when we took her back over and gave her house, I gave her $50 in his pocket. Anyway, so the weekend we couldn't hear anything about her, so I went back the next Monday and asked him, I said, well, how's Michelle doing? And he said, well, you know, I knew something was up. Wrong. They kind of looked at me. No eye contact or anything. Like that. Well, we had a boat here in the house, and the guy got all freaked out about having an alcoholic here, and so they can keep her. Like, what'd you do with her? You know? Well, they called Salvation Army. That's what I said. It really was good. And the guy came out and picked her up, and he was a young guy. He's in his 20s, and he had some experience. His dad was an alcoholic or something like that. Experience for her. And he took her instead of putting her in a ward with everybody, he put her in a house and nourished this girl. I mean, helped take care of her emotional needs. You know? And she said, you gotta come down. Anyway, when I called him, he said, you gotta come down and see her. You know, she's doing really well. And so the guy tried to get my $50 back. He says, no, I can't take it back because I gave it to you unconditionally. So I just left it that way. And went ahead and when I went down and saw Michelle, she was doing great. Just flourishing, just, these are, you know, neat people. She's happy, alert, just doing great, you know. And this guy really took some time with her. He spent about 6 weeks with her, just in her home and everything else. And of course, she got stronger on her own. She got an apartment in Longwood on her own. Anyway, the next day that I went home after I heard this, and I thought, this is a new Christian in me. I was in Decatur, and I just started sharing some dates. I didn't get much mail then, but I got a mail. There was about 3 letters in the mail. And I had a hamburger from McDonald's, and I came in here, and I turned the stereo on, and I took the first letter and I opened it up because getting the letters was thrilled me. And just before I opened it, the radio comes on, Christian Chasen says, and I read the scripture. I says, you know, in the same measure you give to others, it will be given unto you. And I opened the envelope and $50. And it shocked me because, you know, the coincidence of the $50 and the $50 here. And I just, like, I look at the ceiling and I, you know, you can't see anything but the fact that, you know, in my mind's eye, I could see there's angels in heaven. They were looking over and going, oh, look at that one. I was just overwhelmed by it. But anyway, I went on the back with Michelle. And I called once in a while from the station. She also joined me. And then eventually I called Vince, and he said, that's the guy Salvation Army. He said that she has got strong enough to go on her own, and she's got a partner in Longwood. And it's just doing great. And so it went a few weeks and sort of heard out about it. You know, she's starting to get it. Anyway, Vince called me about a month ago, a month after that, and said, I got some heavy news for him. Before the time, he said, you know, Michelle was going to kill that one. Turned out that he says, man, he felt really bad about it. And he says, you know, and he says, she called me up and says, I got a guy that used to know from the past. And he comes from the bar. really good bond together and everything. So what should I do? And he just didn't see it being that heavy, you know. But you know, yeah. He misread it and he says that. So well, you know, just some of your friends will have to change. If you're gonna, you know, if you just have to change your friends, they're gonna drag you down. Just tell them you can't, you know, do it anymore. You know, and just get new friends. And he played it off. He was busy and didn't think about how hard it was anyway. You know, and she told this guy to kill her, beat her up, beat her up. And just like me, and goes, it was cold on the phone. I was at the on duty at the station, and just that cold feeling come over. I'm like, what? You know?
Yeah.
Can't, like, you really? Don't believe it. It was just shocked me, of course. And going to the funeral and everything, and you know, and finding more about it. And she really did do okay. But you know, but it, and I think if I had a hard time, that's a hard one. You know, you try to think of presenting to this, you know, that. Well, why would he do that? Why would that be allowed to happen? A girl really puts your trust in Christ. Why should she? You know what I mean? And anyway, what I come up with, and right or wrong, I know this is how I bash on it, was the fact was that it, in light of scripture and everything else, that God promised not to put you through a test you can't take, you know, there's a limit to it. And she was a heavy, heavy drinker. She died almost twice in operating table, esophagus versus, you know, and she had had a complete blood transfusion, you know, overdose, you know, and so she was clean then, and she left, you know, with an A report card, you know, and if she couldn't do it in the future, that's the only thing I think about, why, you know, why now? And when I went and shared with the family afterwards, I mean, they saw the change in their life, and knew it, and that's something. But anyway, that's the reason I brought it up, the Salvation Army, I think, those guys really put their commitment on the line, and then they walked the talk.
Oh,
they really work hard.
That wasn't why Jarrett stopped in there on his way to RenCon,
no? No. So is that $50, did you buy more silver?
Yeah.
You haven't quit thinking about it.
Yeah.
That I can get. So then he told me, I don't want to hear about it anymore. And so anyway.
Easy boy.
Then 2 weeks later, they had sent me all this stuff. And so we were sitting here on the couch, and I opened the mail, and here's all the things on England. And he told me I was not talking about it anymore. But Douglas, look at all these things on England. He says, we don't have enough money. So anyway, the phone started ringing. And so as he was getting us to answer it here in the kitchen, I just said, Lord, I hope that's the income tax man, and I hope he makes a big mistake, and I want $2,300. In Jesus' name, amen. And so anyway, Doug came back, and his face was real, real white.
He knew he had to go to England.
He goes, Pam, that was the income tax man. I go, really? And he says, yeah, we made a mistake on our income tax. And I go, yeah, I know, I just prayed about it. He goes, what did you pray for? And I go, I prayed for some money. He goes, well, how much did you pray for? And I go, I'm not going to tell you, you think I'm cuckoo. You know, and he says, how much did you pray for? And I go, I can't tell you, I'm too embarrassed. I've never asked for money before. And he goes, Kimberly, how much did you pray for? And he had this little white piece of paper. And I go, I don't tell you, I'm too embarrassed. He goes, tell me, how much did you pray for? And I said, well, I prayed for $2,300. And he started to cry. And I go, what's wrong? He goes, he showed me this piece of paper, and it says $2,300.
Couldn't believe it. I had it in hand.
That's exactly
how
much
he's gonna do that.
They made a mistake for.
Like,
I go, now can we go to England?
Yeah.
Sure. Why don't we run back through the story again? I'm getting interested.
Yeah.
I don't think that's
anything. Now, where were you when you prayed that?
Yeah. Now there's going to be a prophet. Yeah. My kind of guy now.
And then the thing, I said, well, now can I go? And he goes, yeah. So I ran down to the makeup and the stuff I could in the grocery. I'm so glad you caught us, but tonight's the only night we're open. Usually we're always closed by now, you know, at 6 o'clock at night. And I said, well, I want 2 tickets to England. And she said, oh, she says, I'm really glad you came in today. It just happens that this is the last day you can get special tickets for $1,200, you know, $600 round trip, you know, a person. Because tomorrow the prices go up double. I go, oh, praise the Lord, I really want it. And she said, well, you have to give me the money now. And I go, oh, I don't have the money now. I can't, you know. Oh dear, you know, she said, well, let me call the agency and see what's going on. So she called the agency and they said, well, we have to have the money up here and we'll call you back when you think you got it, you know. So about an hour goes by and I called Doug and I go, Doug, they need the money. He said, well, hey, just, you know, you pray for the money to come up right now. And I go, okay. So I'm sitting there in this travel agency and I at least three girls are there and I go, well, my husband said the Lord's going to provide the money.
That's good.
And they thought I was flipped my lid. And so anyway, I said, well, there's got to be a way to do it. And I said, can I borrow from the May company? And they said, on a travel trip? And I said, well, people borrow to put their carpet in. And they said, well, they have funds for that, you know. And they said, they can pick things up and lean on your house and stuff. And I said, well, why don't you call and see if I can borrow for the money? You know, I'll pay them back when I get my money from tax in. So anyway, she said, okay, well, I'll call the credit office. So they called the credit office, and she goes, uh-huh, and she hangs up. She said, well, they're going to call us back. They've never had a case like this in the whole time. May come into business. So anyway, I just sort of sat there. In the meantime, she kept trying to call the travel agency that they were calling it with. A hippopotamus.
You're missing a lot, Doug.
I've added some to this story, I'm sure. Oh, Bob, don't you want to tell this story?
Bob goes, that's not the way it happened.
I said, shut up. I've told it so many times the kids will get it screwed up. Well, now you correct me, okay? No. You got
to
tell the story.
What about if it's a
problem? I've told you this story. Come on, Bob, come and tell the story. Come on, everyone, put your cigarette out and come on. No, Bob's better. Tell us a good story.
Tell us any story.
Yeah, quick.
Once upon a time.
Who's editing this?
Let me put the mic on.
Yeah. We'll set it right here.
You ain't noticed it.
You're going to play this with the fire department?
Yeah.
You might not use it with your other tapes.
No, these are great. We tell them on the table all the time. These kids come and don't know anything. We just put it on your shirt. They tell us at the station all the time.
Does Gary work with you?
Yeah. Well, no, not right now. He's on sheet stuff.
Can you get the tape to him?
Yeah, I'm going to send you the tape. Okay. All I'll do is I'll get Tom, I'll get Fred and Robert, too.
Hi, Gary, you there? Sit back and relax, Gary. I want to tell you something here. Once upon a time. A what? Speak up in the microphone, will you? That ain't the elevator, that's the mixer going, partner.
No, I'm not going to answer this one, Doug.
It all started out. I lived in Huntington Beach. I lived about two blocks from Huntington Beach Pier there. A little apartment back there. Right down from Ralph Williams Chevrolet. if you remember where Ralph Wilson Chevrolet was. I stayed in this alley back there. I had this little room. It was actually a half of a garage that I lived in. And I was dating this girl that lived down in Newport Beach at the time. And I went down there and picked her up and took her back up to my apartment. And things didn't work out quite the way I was hoping they would work out, you know. So I was kind of on a bummer anyway. And so I took her home, and I came back and had a couple of adult beverages on my way back. And they were having this little circus where Beach Boulevard and 101 Highway connect there, right across from the state park. And so I decided to go in there and take a look at the Ferris wheel or whatever you do. You know, it was kind of late and all that. And they had a camel and a hippopotamus in this little cage that they brought out and led around and did all that stuff like that. And I had a Ford van at the time, and so I kind of went back and I had a couple more cocktails. So I decided I'd go back down. I had this good friend of mine, Ray Lucchini, and Omohundro lived right above at the time. And so I got thinking about that camel. And I thought, well, that might run into a problem. But maybe I could, you know, cavort that hippopotamus and take a little ride with me. So I went there, and the thing led like a dog. I mean, they just opened the gate, and everything was closed down about 1 o'clock in the morning. And put a couple boards down and just put it in the back of my truck, my van. I didn't have anything in the back of the van. We just took off to Newport Beach and down to see if we can have a little fun down that way. I was ready to roll about then. Pulled down there and got it out of the van, everything, let it down there, and I was trying to wedge it into his door. And his door was like those apartments are built. They're built real close together, and she couldn't quite make the turn on the whole deal, you know. So I packed her up and put her back in the truck and kind of drove down by the chart house and heading south. And I had this friend of mine, McFadden, that had something to do with the Irvine Company, and I had a key to that gate right behind where that orange juice stand was at on Pacific Coast Highway past Corona Del Mar. Right across from Scotchman's Cove there, where they have the horses at. So I got in there, and we went out and spent the night together out there, and woke up the next morning, and like all ladies like that, you're trying to wonder how you're going to get rid of them the next morning. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. You know? So we were stuck together for a while, and so I go down to Laguna Beach, and I felt kind of bad about it then, and I went down to Laguna Beach and bought a few heads of lettuce, 28, one setting. Brought them back and just threw them down her throat all the time for about 3 days. Did our gig down there, and by then, you know, it was lost hippopotamus. You know, it was swimming down the coast and all that stuff. You know, my God, I got to get rid of this thing. You know, something bad's gonna happen to me. This deal. So I just whipped it back in the back of the truck and took it over that night and dumped it at that Scotchman's Cove over there, at that horse rental place they had down below Corona Del Mar. Just turned it loose out there and said, whew, well, I'm glad to get rid of her, you know, one of those deals. And that was the end of it, and went back. Well, at the chart house one night, we got talking about it, you know, and somehow it came out, and I said, yeah, it has something to do with that deal. And so, anyway, the word got out back and forth, and then three patrol cars pulled up in my alley back there. I was still on the fire department when this happened. And they pulled back there, and they said, oh, boy. And I knew these guys, old-time cops from Huntington Beach there. I've known for a long time. Come on, boy. You know, because I'd been in a couple other deals before that. And come on down, you know, and bring your van. And we got through the whole deal. And they said, well, we got you for grand theft. Oh, he says, yeah, I got Grand Theft Hippo. Oh, wow. All right. You know, going to, wow. You ever seen a small one? So anyway, we went there and ended up in court with Judge Cecilia Baker, whose husband was an alcoholic, and she was the hanging judge. You ever hear about her down there? Oh, Lord. It was like, she was like the Grim Reaper. She just stood over people and just put you away forever. And she put her own husband in jail. Oh yeah, she was just dynamite lady that way. So she got me there, and there was no way out, you know, no graceful way to do it or anything like that. And so it was finally got down to asking, you know, why did you do this, you know? And I said, well, she had six tits and wasn't half bad looking when she had her hair fixed. This is Zingo. 3 weeks, right in the slam, man. She didn't have that big a sense of humor. You know. Needless to say, that was an expensive journey on that one.
And the fire department, too. What is the fire department?
Well, I got off on good behavior. They didn't press it. You know, they said, this is what we can do and all that. And they just wanted, I don't know if you ever knew Vance Durego. Did you ever know him?
No, I didn't know him.
His father was a marshal, and he's the guy I rented from. You know, he was like the marshal for Orange County, so he fixed everything up. There's a lot of political moves on the whole deal.
Put this thing back on. We got to hear the barrister.
Well, you
got to
tell
me
your version.
Huh?
No.
You like my version better?
I love that part.
What do you say about the guys? What do you say?
The guys in the back of the van?
Yeah.
What do we do? What do we do if they catch us? What do we do if the cops stop us? There's this big hippo head with real bad breath and his little curly Q hair. I'll just tell him she ain't so bad looking when her hair is combed.
That's a story you used to tell.
No,
it's
no.
Getting to like a fish story now.
Yeah, there's a lot of different variations.
And then how do you
could all be true or all false.
That one about, he says, how do you know?
They said, how do you know?
No. To him, we got to get the bear story.
Okay, I got the bear story. We're going to do it. Just leave it on here for a bit. If you get used to being there, you won't be conscious of it. This is for a few people. It's not a big deal.
It wouldn't make any difference anyway. The governors are better ones than that. There's reprieves out on the same street.
So I'm saving for the new team.
Yeah.
We're ready.
Yeah, right. Cool, huh? Yeah, how did you know it was hippo? Because they found a hippopotamus dung in the back of his
head. Oh, that's how they finally came up with the deal. They found traces of it back there. But I didn't have anyone.
You were laughing at him, going, right, how did you know that?
I didn't have anybody with me that night. There wasn't anybody with me.
Oh, shit.
Jarrett, now, you used to tear that. Well, I'm going to leave my story this time.
Yeah, we're going to tell ours. Everybody loves
it. I mean, you know, I get right into this. John's heard it 100 times. Okay, we got to hear about the bears. Hear about the Wyoming bears.
All the stories this summer in Montana.
John heard them all.
I heard that. I know another one.
Jared's getting too old. You create too many new stories. Okay, Dave, have you heard the bears? You've heard the bears.
Well, I heard you tell them. Yeah.
Well, there's all kinds of bear stories.
How about the one where you guys... The one where you guys created the dump. Where you were going to pick up the girls at the camp, and they weren't there, so you went to the dump.
No, we used to go. We had Billy Rourke. I think you met him before in Aspen. And him and I were working in this place in Wyoming where it was a lodge, and it was between the lodge. We worked at Togedy Pass in Du Bois, Wyoming. I don't know, out of Jackson Hole. I don't know if you've ever been through there, but we worked it. Okay, well, this was north of Jackson Hole, like going into Yellowstone Park, except you take a right and you go over towards Du Bois. And up there at Togedy Pass and this Brooks Lake Lodge, I worked there for 3 summers. And you couldn't have that. All you ran into was cowboys, you know, and cowgirls in Du Bois, you know. And you go over to Jackson Hole, and I knew all these mountain climbers. You could run into the young mountain climbing girls, you know. So we had a little better chance with them being out of Aspen than we did with the cowboy girls. So we would head over that way on the weekend. And we'd always, you know, the guys say, well, take out the garbage, you know, because the garbage is a big problem there. You don't want it around because the bears come around the lodge and all that. And they're just black bears. They don't bother anything, but they come around, you know. So it can be touch and go sometimes. So we'd haul this garbage down to this one dump in Moran, you know. Well, we got all whiskied up this one night, you know, on our way to Jackson Hole. We thought, well, you know, all these bears are just waiting for us, you know. And it's like the opening the doors of the supermarket when we pull up because you got all this garbage from this lodge. And so I said, just turn off all the lights and just lay down in the front seat of the truck, you know. And then it was about a 53 Chevy pickup, you know. And all these bears start climbing in the back of the truck and all this garbage, you know. We used to just get out and throw it as fast as we could and drive out of there, you know. So we just laid in the front and just hit on this bottle of brandy until all got quite a few bears in the back or enough of them, you know.
I says, put that son of a bitch in gear and get out of here as fast as you can. Head towards Jackson Hole, you know. So we just throw it in there, you know. We got two bears in the back, you know. One goes about 50 feet and bails, and the other one panics and just stands in the back of that truck. We got out of there and got on the junction, went through the check station, you know, and we're headed for Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with this bear in the back of the truck just cooking down the road, you know. So we got to about the first stoplight in Jackson, and the bear bails out, you know. We're just tipping over laughing, you know. We go in this bar and get, proceeding to get really drunk, you know, just laughing at each other, having a great old time, and this cop walks in and goes, aha. He says, you went by about five cars that saw you with that bear in the back. And I says, what bear are you talking about, man? Says, you know, the guy says, there was a bear in the back of your truck. And the guy was just a redneck cop, and he's all upset. He says, you find the bear, get him to come over and say he's in our truck. We might have something to talk about, you know, on these deals. You know? No, not bad on that deal. Well, they come right in. Yeah. They come right in. They come right around where I live up there. But they're not. The worst bears are the ones in Yellowstone Park because they're not afraid of people. You know, they've just they over years and years and years of that. You know, they're not afraid of people. But you take the bears up around where I live, and as soon as they see you, they're gone. They take off running. But around Jackson, now what they're doing, which is really a threat to us, is because they'll take those bad bears out of Yellowstone Park, and they'll fly them in an area like above Pony, and they'll dump them off, see? And then all these bears, we're sitting down there having a great time cooking bacon, and all of a sudden over the top of the ridge comes one of these bears that's so used to raiding trailers, and he hadn't ate for 2 weeks, and he'll just come cooking in there. So I always have to worry about those kind of bears. The other bears aren't bad at all.
Didn't they eat one of your dogs?
Mm-hmm.
That was a lion.
I really don't know what ate it.
Did you find a lion?
Yeah, I have a trouble with animals. I did. That's a goose with the tuna boat stories. I don't know any tuna boat stories.
That's not true.
I can remember going with him a couple times, but I don't remember what happened.
Yeah. I wonder why.
I'm not to say it didn't happen, right?
Was it the same era?
Might have had a little brain fade on a couple of those trips. Goose? Oh yeah, he's my hero. Yeah. He's my hero.
Oh gosh, I wish he
was in. What happened to a lion?
Well, these are like mountain lions. Around where I live up there, and I'm not sure what it was that it killed one of my dogs. Just dusted it. I don't know what it was. It was the dogs were up on a deer kill, and it was a big dog. It was a cross between like a Labrador and a German Shepherd. You know, very aggressive. It was only about 8 months old, and my wife went down the road. She was going down the road, and she came back, and my brother and I were there. And it just snowed, a real big storm going on. And she found the dog dead in the middle of the road. And it had its neck broke, you know, been bit behind the head. And it was snowing so hard then we couldn't really go out and backtrack it to find out what was going on. So about 3 days later, I started picking it back up the track, and I walked up. It was kind of above that old herder's cabin up in there, between that and that guy's house down there, up on that side hill. And there was a deer kill there. And something had been laying up there for a long time, but the wind had blown over to the left. But, you know, you could tell there was a big shiny, like a spot like an animal lays on, and then it freezes and it thaws and freezes again, you know, where it gets hard back like that. And something had been laying there, and I think the other dogs all went up there. But this dog was just aggressive enough like that. My dog, that lab, was in on it too, but he wasn't aggressive enough to jump in on whatever was there, and this other one was, and he got nailed. So I just got killed. It's part of living up there, you know. What? No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you start thinking about that, then you wouldn't go, you know.
We did our fishing balls last
time. Well. Well, it depends on where I'm going now, you know. if I'm going into Yellowstone Park, yeah, I'd have a gun loaded beside me all the time. But up there where I live, I don't worry about that. Like, I go out and work all the time and do all that, you know. And I never think about it like an animal going to eat me or anything like that while I'm out working. But Yellowstone Park, where the animals have been, you know.
Hebgen Lake.
Yeah, Hebgen Lake, any of those places where the people have been around those animals so long that the animal isn't what he normally is. He's not afraid of people. Mm-hmm. Normally they have that fear built into them that where they won't bother you at all. But, you know, if you've been eating out of a free lunch. Free lunch. Oh. Well, you know, the way I look at it, the bears could eat 18 tourists a week and would still have plenty of tourists. You know? We're never going to run out of people. We might run out of bears, but you don't run out of people.
Bears 9, tourists 0.
Yeah.
Plan on staying in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Montana.
Yeah. In Montana.
Why am I stuck in Wyoming?
Yeah, it's a matter of getting established to the point, you know, where, like now, I don't have to worry about like payments or any of that type of thing, but I have to worry about producing something to where I can make a living mm-hmm. while I'm there. And I'm learning things down here at Tom's, and different techniques on how to do things, stuff like that. So it's a matter of getting it all set up to where, like in Montana, you never want to get in debt because there isn't any way to pay your way out of debt. But if you can figure out a way of a little bit of guiding here and fishing there, and I sell some firewood, and then maybe I can build a, you know, some little gimmicks or whatever, you know, in my workshop and stuff like that, then yeah, you're never going to be rich. You know, that's not why you're up there. If you want to be rich, you would never move to Montana. You know, that's another. It's a lifestyle that you lead.
Well, it's sort of like Oregon. Here, all these people from California. Oh, they want to go to Oregon. Oh, no. They want to live in Oregon. But there's nothing to do in Oregon. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if you happen to go up there and you've made enough money down here that you can go up there and retire, that's great.
Oh, just one of either. Whatever you get there. It sounds great to me. I haven't missed yet. Just, okay, that's me. Your deal in Montana is that you're dealing with either tourists, you know, people up there enjoying themselves, or what we call them guests. You don't call them a tourist, you call them a guest, you know. It's,
yeah, he's got to watch out what he calls me.
Yeah. Tuna.
Charlie.
Charlie. But, I mean, you're dealing with that type of situation, or either making a product that you're selling out of state. Mm-hmm. You can't depend on, like, me making something and taking it down to the local farmer and him buying it, except for firewood. And I do well on that. But, I mean, you can't produce a product, your marketing and everything in Montana is very slim.
Well,
there
aren't that many people either.
Well, there's more people in Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, Garden Grove, Stanton.
Westminster,
than there is in the whole state of Montana.
Really?
They have less than 1 million people in the whole state of Montana. Yeah. So.
We still have two senators.
Yeah.
Hey, that might be your comment.
He's a senator.
Oh, wow.
Senator Jarrett.
Oh, better yet, a judge.
Judge.
Yeah, judge. Get even with us.
You've got lots of experience. Legal system, you know.
The big question would be, will you judge with mercy or will you judge harsh and keep him doing worse than what he did?
Mm-hmm.
Either topping his record or
well,
Jane's got him on the straight and narrow.
I asked him how many stories he has since he got married.
Oh, yeah, you didn't tell Jane about me since you've been married.
Quite a few.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Did I go to bed too early last year?
The guy came by the Playboy, the pull-out, you know, the rod house. Great. Well, let me turn the table right now.
What, Jared? What's this?
No, not me. You know.
We're just starting to. You know what? We're not developing them. We're just playing with the thing. We're heating like the house and all the buildings with hot water. It runs through the slabs and runs through all those different trick things. And then Tom and the fellas down at his shop, they built a water wheel where we're generating electricity. So the thing would basically be self-efficient. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying for, is to build something that, you know, just kind of runs by itself. You know, the hot water and the electricity and the whole shop, you know.
You take a bath, there's one temperature, it comes out hot.
Yeah.
From the hot springs.
Yeah, like in my cabin, it's just, water. When I flush the toilet, it's hot water sending it down, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all hot water, everything, the whole house all hot water.
It's a warm water.
Yeah.
Runs it under the house.
Well, when it's 40 below and you sit down on that toilet and flush it about 3 times. Oh, man. Man.
Pipes never freeze.
We might have it, yeah. No, I hope they haven't. I'll find out here in about a month.
Did you leave them dripping?
Oh, yeah. Hope you never know what happens. Yeah, I've got a guy who goes and checks on it, but I mean, still, you never know from one weekend to the next what's going to happen. But there's very few people come up there. I only counted 6 people all winter. That winter, I saw 6 people for the whole winter. Mm. And they were cross country skiers, which are real kind of purist people anyway, and they know they don't ever bother anyone. Mm-hmm. There's very few people up there.
You getting left off?
Hmm?
You got livestock on there?
No.
How many acres do you have?
80.
Oh, cool.
It's right in this valley. There's meadows, spruce and pine trees, and neat stream that's, you know, as wide as this house. It runs through the property.
Yeah, it's a nice spot.
Hot springs up on the hill. You go up and jump in the pool.
Now,
how
did you find out about it?
I'm just looking.
I mean, because you were living in Aspen?
We used to take off. My wife and I both decided, you know, like this Aspen thing is either it'll kill me or I'll kill it. And I think it'll probably kill me first, you know. So, you know, I'd built this house at a time when I bought the property and built the house, the building regulations were pretty loose. Mm-hmm. And the property wasn't that expensive, okay. And then all of a sudden, after 5 or 6 years, and every Hollywood starlet wants to live there. You know? So then I'm sitting on something that's worth a few bucks. And so I said, wow, this isn't really me here anyway. You know, so we'll take off and start looking. We went through Idaho, Utah, all over. And, you know, going into towns, talking to people and visiting with them and all that. And the main reason, like Idaho and Utah, was out of the question because not that I don't like them. I know a lot of the Mormon people, but they really ostracize new people coming in. Either you're going to be a Mormon, you are a Mormon, or we don't want you around. That's exactly their feelings, which is okay. It's a private club. You go around Challis, Idaho, which is a really nice area. And when you get into northern Idaho, around Sand Point, then the whole thing starts changing again. But the minute you drive into Montana, they have Mormon people in Montana, and they have a lot of, you know, different churches and all that, you know. In Montana, but Montana's kind of a whatever you are is okay by us, one of those type of deals. You know.
which is completely different than a lot of those places. Wyoming's that way too. It's mm-hmm. whatever you are, you know, you're okay by that too. And so that, you know, and then we ran into that place, and we were looking for things. I had a list of things on, you know, I want to be completely surrounded by national forests, access into it, you know, year round, or whatever I can make access into it year round. Everything listed that I wanted, fishing, the whole shot, and Jane says, well, hot springs. I went, are you kidding? You know? I mean, you're asking a lot. And we drove around to a lot of different hot springs and places all over, and we were driving. I'd given up. We were just completely given up, and we stopped in Ennis, and we were eating breakfast, and we got two or three friends that live in Ennis somewhere. But they're all fishing guides on the Madison, where Tom fishes at. And we've just given up, and we're on our way back to Aspen. And she walked across the street, and here it was right there in the window, and the guy just put the sign up. The thing had never been for sale since 1912.
Is it on sale since?
No. The last time it changed hands was 1912. So there it was. And, we went and looked at it, and that looked like a good spot to start.
So how long have you been there?
We bought the property in 1978.
And, you don't think of moving, do you? 6 years?
No, I wouldn't think of moving. I'd fight it for a long time before I moved. You know, I would, you know, just, if I had $1 million, I wouldn't want to own anything but that. So now all I got to do is go out and make $1 million. you know, it's just, it's a matter of survival up there, but everything comes slow. You know.
Now, how far is the nearest town? I mean, what we'd call a town.
Pony?
Where's the town?
Bozeman, about 60 miles. There's a little town called Pony, Montana.
Yeah, but I can imagine what some of those little towns are. I mean, they're really little.
Littler than that.
Oh, there's 100.
A post office.
There's no grocery store in Pony, right?
Mm-hmm. There's
no.
There's 150 people in a bar. That's it.
Bar tends for Bert in the bar.
And the bartender is 84 years old, and she's been doing it for 44 years. It's just like walking into your grandmother's front living room, going into her bar.
He says, close the door.
So if you would stay there for the winter, and you would go like in October to buy some groceries that would last you for a long time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. we spent all last winter there.
I mean, I'm thrilled that we are here because I don't know anybody like this. I mean, I thought, gee, what would I do with all my discount stores?
Well, you wouldn't have to worry about your charging out there anyway.
Yeah.
No problem.
Kim.
What we did last winter, we could drive within about closer than here to Beach Boulevard, about halfway between here and Beach Boulevard. We could drive that close to our house. And I made a sled out of two pairs of old skis, and then we packed our food and our clothing, you know, that we'd go to town and wash, and a couple of gallons of gasoline to run this generator to get the battery charged to run the heater. In the deal, we were sitting on our hot water, so I mean we didn't have to run it that often, except our trailer. We used to cook in it. I don't have the kitchen, so we had to kind of keep it warm for doing that purpose. We'd maybe make two trips. We'd go to town once every 2 weeks, and then when we parked the truck, then we'd probably have to make three trips. So we'd take everything that would freeze the first night, and then you come back and get the rest of the stuff. And you go back and forth that way.
His stepbrother is a forest ranger up in Eureka.
Snowmobiles up there, they work, but they get cold. When it gets 40 below, it's almost good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need a hot plug.
You gotta have electricity for the hot plug.
Yeah, we don't have any electricity. So.
Put it in a big plastic bag and stick it in the hot spring.
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice. No electricity.
No.
That's why we made them this little paddle with.
You burn candles.
It's about this big.
You can go to bed. It doesn't get dark.
About an amp.
Yeah, or so. You can just go to bed.
It depends on the head that he gets.
You read a lot because you don't have television.
You know, could get 10 amps.
You read a lot of books and stuff like that, and then when it gets dark,
so
you just go to bed.
So he's working on a reservoir.
But then it gets light ruler, so you get up really.
We're trying to
work
more
on that schedule.
Charge batteries. Just let it run all day.
Yeah.
Almost hit it.
how much had, did you have, how much did we talk about? 75 feet?
75
high?
Feet right
oh,
now.
That's pretty good.
Must have culture
shock
when you come to Newport Beach.
Oh, yeah. The noise is what gets
about
me.
No, about 30 feet.
Well,
yeah,
you got to, you know, did load, this thing will really spin until you put the generator on it. And then it, you know,
you're starting to pull it down then. Mm-hmm. But right, we'll kick out about, well, when I get these other springs in, we'll be kicking out about 3 amps on it.
Which you think it'll be that much?
Oh, yeah. Which will deep charge. Yeah, it's kicking almost 2 right now.
Is it?
Yeah. So it'll charge 2 of these deep charge batteries like you use on a golf cart, mm-hmm. marine type batteries. And we'll be able to run the lights. And you might be able to run electric deep freeze on it. Mm-hmm. We don't know. But you'll be able to run the lights, which is what a deal that would be. Walking in front of the lights on. You go, wow, what are you talking about? Huh? Yeah, yeah. Candles, kerosene lighters, propane lights. I have mm-hmm. propane up there. Mm-hmm. I've got a generator where I can run my tools, but I mean, you don't, for the gasoline wise, you don't run it, you know, to sit around like we're doing now.
Right.
You know? Like you have early dinners.
I say you probably get up and go down to the sun.
How long have you had your house built then?
Well, that's not
You've
done yet.
For about 6 years.
No, well, I was still in Aspen when I bought the property. So I had to go through the process of selling my business and then finishing the house in Aspen and then selling it and going up there. So I had the property for about 3 years before I could even live on the property. You know? Mm-hmm. So we've only been there in about 3 summers.
And how does your wife like it?
She likes it better than I do. She'd be there right now. Mm-hmm. She doesn't like being out here at all. You know? Uh-huh. It's a real bummer for her to be down here.
Where's she from originally?
Chicago.
Oh, so you're both transplants.
She's from Waukesha.
Urban bustle. Working there?
Mm-hmm. She works over at a place called Paul's Cafe over here.
Oh, yeah, Bouchard.
Yeah.
And coffee shop.
Yeah. She's a waitress.
I've heard nothing but great things about that.
Yeah. That's where she works.
The biggest breakfast in North
Carolina. Yeah. Great
omelet. It's a cross between the Snug Harbor and Zuby's.
No,
it's one of these, they're yelling, and the waitress is yelling, the cooks are yelling. And it's quite a show.
But they have a huge breakfast. They have all the fried potatoes in there.
She's always worked really hard.
And she's working twice as hard now because she's going to do
it. What's that about the house you had in Aspen?
Oh, it's a house they just built with my hand. It was a hand-built house.
When I saw it, it had grass this high on the roof. It's a solid roof.
The cow on top.
He's like, he doesn't move his lawn very often.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. How do you get those lamps from here?
Do they know?
Sold them. Sold them like everything else.
That's true.
Whole house looked like something out of the back room of a police department. They had an auction. Inquirer here is on his hand. No, it'll never do that. That's the top. It's a top spot. It's like saying it was Newport Beach going downhill. You know, it ain't gonna happen.
Weird it was. I hear like the.
There's some money. Much money coming through that.
Well, used to be 150 of them. Now there's 10 or 15.
Well, it's like anything like that. Well, they got 10 that are efficient. They used to have 150 that weren't. You know, everything's relative to what's happening with the dollar. You know? Mm-hmm. Like the last 3 years I was there. You walk through town, walk down the streets, all you heard was Spanish, because the people had all the money from Argentina and South America, and they were there, you know. Now all you hear is like the harbor bombers, you know, all the Japanese are there, you know.
Harbor
bombers. So, I mean, it changes from, you know, from year to year on who has the money. When it gets back to where it's Americans have all the money, then all you hear is all these big Texans coming through town, you know.
There were Texans.
Yeah, well, that's, well... Right, the money's good in the States right now. Texans are there.
Oh, boy. There's wave after wave of people.
Huh? A different type of people.
I
think you just have to develop different accents.
So. Wasn't Vail, like when Gerald Ford was president, that was supposedly a big squash, and Aspen was losing all its
What happened to Gary? I want Jimmy. He's a character. Remember they had the $1.98 beauty contest?
Remember
Rip Thor, the guy who ran it? He's a double for him. He has that blonde mustache and blonde hair like that. And he has a zippy personality like that. You know, he can mimic anything. And he's a boring. He should start it. Just put a nickel in his slot. And he runs for 4 hours.
Yeah.
You know, he loves those stories.
Yeah, how did you meet him?
Who's Bob? I met him in Newport Beach. Down, we lived above these guys. A friend of mine and I lived upstairs, and Ray Lucchini and Gary Pack and John Gray lived downstairs. And Jarrett was kind of a friend of theirs, and that's where I met him. Everyone used to go down there, and they all worked at restaurants or something, so they had the days off, and they'd play volleyball and surf, and Jarrett used to come down there when he wasn't fire department, you know, and you know, we'd go down there, and I thought, who is this guy? Come on. Oh, we went to Alaska, and one time I came home from work, and there was a Billy Graham crusade at Angel Stadium, and I was sitting out in the patio. John Gray and I were talking. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And here comes Jarrett, and he's looking real bad. He's walking between the houses.
I really appreciate him.
Oh, you know, and he just kind of gets there, and he didn't say hi or anything. He just sits down. He's going, I said, Bob, what's wrong? He said, oh, man, I had a bad night. This is in the afternoon. And I said, let me buy you dinner. I said, let's go to dinner. No. Let me buy you dinner. Oh, well. Okay. I said, I got this great place I want to take you. He says, okay. So, all these guys at work, you know, we were all going to go to the crusade. So, I call them all up and I said, don't say anything. So, I get Jarrett in the car. He's kind of sitting there, you know. We go by and pick up this guy and pick up that guy, and we're zooming off down the freeway and heading toward Anaheim. Church. Hey, man, where are we going? I got this secret spot I'm going to take you. So we start getting close to Angel Stadium, and he sees Billy Graham Crusade. Oh, no. Come on, Jarrett, you'll love it. So we drag him in there. We get him in there, and we're sitting up there, and here's, you know, 42,000 Christians. Jarrett's sitting there, and he goes, well, all the Christians are here. Where are the lions?
All these people turn around.
Yeah,
boy,
it was like it said something real bad. Yeah.
Tonight he went right over here with us. He brought his own car. That was great.
I can stay at home with Cal Worthy.
We know, the guys do tell stories about you all the time. You know, there's not a week goes by I don't hear the story. Especially Gary's around.
It takes the pressure off the other four.
Yeah. And then I heard Tom tell me he knew you. And then Fred came over and he knew you too.
Tom, how do you know Fred?
From the beach. Same way.
It must have been a small beach at that time.
He's really known that.
I like
it. We had a lot of big parties.
We knew a lot of people, didn't we? You know, we had this good friend, Ray Lucchini. He's a big, strong, athletic guy. I mean, they play volleyball and, you know, surf. And back in these days, they were just real athletic. And Jarrett was just like he is now. Fat, you know, always drinking, coughing, you know, smoking. And so one night we're at the Ancient Mariner. And everyone's real drunk. And Lucchini's booning Jarrett real bad. Like, Jarrett, you slob. You know that. Everyone's going,
yeah, Jarrett.
You know, so we get out of here. We're getting ready to leave, and Jarrett says, Lucchini, I bet you that I could beat you from, say, here out to the Ancient Mariner sign. Right at the front door. And everybody's roaring, you know, people are standing all around, people are coming into the restaurant, they're all stopping and watching this deal, and Lucchini and Jarrett are going at it, you know. And Ray's going, come on, and they're starting to make bets and everything. No one's betting on Jarrett. So they say, okay, here we go, we're going to get on your mark, you know, and everybody's, you know, Lucchini's already, you know, Jarrett's standing on your mark, get set. Go! And you gotta imagine it. Ray and Bob are both really drunk.
Ray's Mark, dead guy.
Yeah. Get set. Go. And Jarrett puts his foot out and Lucchini goes in the parking lot. Elbows are skinned up. His knees are skinned up. And he's just laying there like this. And Jarrett goes.
Glorious win.
And Lucchini goes, oh no.
Yeah. It's all skinned up.
You did.
But I heard they
that.
Got your back in Aspen when they were bet. Whoa!
No.
Oh no! Blew it up. When they bet you couldn't hit the golf ball.
I've been talking about
that. Chipping at that thing.
Yeah.
That was a constant deal there.
From the bottom.
Had two old friends that moved up about the same time I did up to Aspen. It was Ray Lucchini. It was the guys that were in this John Gray that lived down below us. Old surfboarder. He made surfboards for Holby for many years. And he's a bartender guy, and this Ray really was a super nice guy. And they moved up there at the same time I did, you know. So it was like 12 years of the same thing we were doing when we lived in Newport Beach. You know. It just never stopped.
Scenery, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Why is just in a different form?
Yeah, we just moved to a different locale.
And Rex Banks went up there and Pentagraph.
Yeah, we had everybody stayed there for a while, except for Tom. Tom was about the only one that
didn't
live there. He was always working. He was always pretty serious up there.
Yeah.
Do you guys used to think he was crazy to work so hard?
No, we always liked it. You know.
One time I came up, how did we decide to go to Alaska?
I don't know.
Jarrett, let's go to Alaska. Okay.
Now, your dad wanted you to go look at some property around Williams Lake, which really pretty country.
Good.
Yeah, right.
And he wouldn't go. You know, he said, my dad wants me to go to Alaska. I'm going, wait a minute here. I don't want to go. You know, so I said, oh, man, let's go to Alaska. I'm not doing anything this week. So finally he says, yeah, we'll go. And I'm like, well, you know, I always
do that. So
they took that Ron Soto with him. He's vice president now. You know, and the kid never been out of Orange County in his life. You know, much.
Well, I got to tell you, okay. So we're getting ready for this big adventure to Alaska. Yeah. We got to catch the airplane first thing in the morning, and I'm trying to sleep.
He's as serious as he is now.
And I'm trying to sleep, and Jarrett's living in the living room in there.
Mm-hmm. Just for the night.
In Charlie's room, right?
Yeah.
And he comes in with this lady, and they're in there.
Pop,
champagne, all night long, you know. So at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm ready to go, and they're still in there giggling. And Jarrett's, you know, had three bottles of cold duck, and I mean, he was feeling no pain. I said, "Come on, Jarrett, we gotta go."
He was ready for the flight.
Okay. So we get him, put him in the car, and I chase off to Huntington Beach to pick up Ron. So by this time, Jarrett's passed out in the back. He never wiggled.
I'm going to Alaska with him.
Right. Ron gets in his. I said, that's Bob back there.
Yeah.
So we get to LAX. I'm going, Jarrett. I mean, it took me 20 minutes to wake this guy up. And he was, you know, I mean, he had an hour's worth of sleep. And we, you know, getting him.
I've been giggling with her for 2 days.
And he was,
you know, we get him out of the car and we're kind of dragging him into the thing, and they had a baggage deal that went by, you know, they had these black guys. And Jarrett plops on there. He's rolling down the steel.
Get off there! Get off there!
And Jarrett kind of rolls off, and he's got his fishing pole, his little stubby fishing pole, in his backpack. And this is the truth, too. I'm not kidding. We get him in there, and we get him to the plane, and we get him on, and we sit down, and he was just like this. And I was watching him, and he went, his hand went between the seats, and there was this black sailor behind us, sitting behind us. Pass that bad boy up.
This guy had a little bottle of whiskey under his hat.
He says, don't let the stewardess see his jersey. Right.
You know, I'm going, you know, he smelled that. I couldn't believe it.
You know, the guy says, that's pretty good, huh, Jared? He has it back to him, and pretty soon it's, you know, and this guy's caught up.
We haven't got off the ground yet. Yeah. Stewardesses weren't coming by.
We flew into Juneau or someplace, and then we flew to White Horse in the Yukon. And we spent
that
the night.
That must have been a big plane.
Yeah. Flumpity bump. And Jarrett was telling us about Yukon Bill or something. Anyway,
the funny part about these guys is they got up there and they, you know, their dad sent them up there, which I can appreciate, you know, that, you know, they're going to save some money, so they're going to rent a car. So him and this Ron Soto guy, they come back and they got a Volkswagen. I'm looking at that thing going, oh, no, Volkswagen? You've got to drive that Pan Am Highway all the way back to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. It's 1,700
miles. 1,700
miles,
and these guys are all, you know, it's 3 days. They want to get back in 3 days. In a Volkswagen? I'm going, oh, no. It's all muddy roads, you know. So we get out on this thing.
Four-wheel drive.
No,
I'm saying they should have a four-wheel drive.
Well, no, a big Cadillac. Anything you can hit things with and keep going. They get out there, and you start down one of those roads, and one of those logging trucks come by, or they're hauling.
You can't see the mud.
They put up a sheet of mud, and then it's about 15 seconds before your wiper can kind of put it down this way, where you can get one look, you know, and then come back, and you got to guess a lot, and you're driving, and then it starts getting the evening or early morning, then all that mud starts icing up. Well, this Mexican kid, man, he'd never been out in Orange County. A really nice kid. But, you know, he'd be driving that thing, he's going like this, and the truck go by, and he'd go, ah. And we're just going like this, and off in the ditch, you know, sideways, and on the side, and pushing it back on the road. And this is like twice between here and Beach Boulevard, you know. I'm going, get out of there, let me drive this thing. And I says, just pull over here, and we'll get a little bit of this brandy, and we'll get this bad boy back down the road, you know. So as drunk as I am, he still thinks I'm a better driver than he is, so it's over. He's going, you're doing a good job, and you give me this brandy.
No, that's not how it happened. We went, and we had a flat tire, and we were in the middle of nowhere. There's like 200 miles between cities there.
I'll get you
and
back.
These little towns, barely anything. So we come into this place, it's called Fort Nelson, and it looked kind of like they had some curbs, and they were digging up the main street, and this main street was real wide. It wasn't like anything we'd seen.
That's because it snows so heavy that the only way they can keep the main road open and the streets on either side, they could have real wide streets there. You know, it's like 50 yards across the street.
They're doing this work on the street. They've got a big, you know, they like to put in a sewer. And we've got to get this flat tire fixed, and it's a rental car, and we don't really want to pay for fixing this flat tire, and we go into this one gas station. Hey, you got any tires for this? You know, we had a credit card for this. You have any tires? Yeah. Guy goes, no, why don't you try over there? So we, over the gas station on across the street, across the ditch, over there. So we go over there, and this guy, we don't have a credit card for this place, but he's got a tire. And so Jarrett starts, you know, Ron and I are kind of, Jarrett's negotiating. Say, you know, those guys over there will take our credit card, but you got the tire. Can we work some kind of deal? The guy goes, oh, yeah, well, maybe, you know. So we go back over there. And Jarrett says, hey, do you want her Avis? The guy goes, this kid, I think so. The other guys didn't honor any of this. He tried that. But this guy did. So now we're not using our credit card. So he says, well, you know, they've got a tire over there, and if we could get him to put the tire on, could we charge it here, and then you guys work it out, you know what I mean? He's like, it was a kid. He said, yeah, I think so. He says, well, I'll tell you what, if I get this guy to wave to you over here, then we'll go ahead and do it, okay? And he says, yeah, okay. So we go back over to the other gas station, and Jared says, now that guy's going to honor the thing now. You'll put the tire on for us. He'll pay you if you do the tire. The guy says, and he says, and if you wave, then he's going to acknowledge that. And so the guys are out there waving across the street, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. So this guy's putting a tire on, and we're kind of, hey, pretty good. Got our tire fixed, you know, because you need one out there. Mm-hmm. And so we get the tire on, and Jared says, by the way, will you go ahead and fill this car up, you know? And the guy goes, yeah, sure.
Why not?
Filling it up, and we go back over the other place, and Jared says, okay, well, what do we need to do? What do we need to sign? And the guy goes, about then the boss drives in, he's filling up his car. And this kid says, hey, Ron, do we honor Avis? And the boss goes, yeah, I think so. Okay, well, let's just put it on this card. So they put it on this deal, and he wrote something on there, and he gives it to Jarrett to sign, and Jarrett signs it Ashley Famous. So then we go back across the street. Jarrett gets his car filled up, and we're waving. And
everybody's
waving. Any time, he told Ron to go get the brandy. Go over to the liquor store and get a bottle of brandy. So Ron thought brandy was just wine, you know, like a different kind of wine. So we get this bottle of brandy, and we got the tank. The guy's just clipping up, putting the thing on, and we're just going, bye. And Jared's got this bottle of brandy. And he passes it back to Ron. Ron's in the back seat. We wouldn't let him in the front anymore. Ron's in the back seat. And Ron goes, you know, he couldn't catch his breath. He's in the back. And Jared says, okay. Drive it. I said, Jared, did you pay? He said, shh. Quiet. Give me 2 weeks and I don't own this town. I said, give you 2 weeks and they'd hang you. We left. Those guys are probably still trying to collect for that.
They probably started a war there in that town and never ended.
They waved at me.
While shooting at each other across the street.
They were waving at one another. I was going, oh, no.
Yeah, we left. Everybody was waving at each other. It was a good time.
The funny thing is the boss, he was
not. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't know. Yeah, I think so. I was going, oh.
Well, no one does anything like that because you don't never take a chance living in that kind of country. You know, like, you'd never want to do anything like that in Montana because they'd catch up with you. But, like, we was hoping that Volkswagen run all the way to Vancouver, which it did.
We got to Vancouver, and we went to check this thing in. And these kids at the Avis County were there, and I gave them the thing. Ron and Bob were kind of standing there, kind of like, looking around, and like, where are we? You know? And this kid gets in and goes, White Horse?
You know? 3 days.
Anyway, 1,700 miles? And I didn't say anything. He says, wow, you know, like, wow, we never had one like, you know, and he said, sign here, and I signed there, and I said, well, off to Argentina. And those kids behind the counter go, wow, who are those guys?
Did you sleep tonight?
Huh? Yeah, we stopped. Oh, we had some lovely spots.
Yeah.
Yep.
That one place is free.
Which one?
Oh, we stopped twice. We stopped two nights. I remember. We
yeah,
stopped
one place called. Where it was 80 below zero that winter. And another one where it was
St. George's, or not St. George's, George.
It doesn't. Not one like that. But that wasn't that cold when we were there.
No, we were there in September. It was pretty good.
And then that other place where they kind of put us in, all the pipes were frozen.
Yeah. Yeah, it was starting to get cold. But it wasn't, there were still like summer rooms available in a certain spot.
Frozen pipes in summer rooms.
No, that was fun.
So how long were you in Alaska?
3 days.
We were in Alaska about 10 minutes. No, we were in Juneau, Alaska. We cruised around there for a little while. We were only there for an evening.
Did you buy a property for you to have?
No.
We,
it was just a joy ride. We had a good time.
He just wanted him to see that country up in there. He didn't. He wasn't real excited about going by himself.
Yeah.
Hell.
We had fun. Boy. Yeah. What else did
Are
we do, Jerry?
Hmm? Everybody else? No, we're paying.
Oh, yeah, that's plenty of money. We're in big
custody tonight. Well, we got the mother and the drug. Well, the judge ordered the mother and the drug. And then I don't think she's gone into yet. And we got her. She cannot be residing in Ryan again. So, with that court order passed, we have to go back in July again. Mm-hmm. At least we're, the same judge says that he's going to hear the same case, so we don't have to have.
My sister just adopted a little mix. I like that. I always call it a pickaninny myself. My mother calls it mixed. And I guess they have the rights to retrieve that child after like 6 months later or something like that. That'd be pretty heavy to have a kid, you know, for like a year or something like that, and then all of a sudden they come back and say, well, we want it back.
Well, we've had Christine
2 years. Yeah. That'd be tough.
Too long.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a new case referral, so she seems to be a little more with it.
We'll see.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Ralph wrote good and then, changed their mind. Because we had, you know, in October they recommended guardianship for us. And then in December she did a 180 and so we said we're going to be reunited.
She did 180.
It's one of those big ones, you know, you kind of go along and say, okay, Lord, everything's just going real smooth now. And then, oh, wow, it's like we're, you know. So. We've seen her really grow in the last 2 years. And she knows a different type of life than what she's had.
How many years did she live in?
Six. Her mother doesn't have custody of her son either. She lost him in December.
Did she kind of give her up for adoption, or did they take her away?
Christine was taken away. So was her son.
Bob, why don't you meet your mailing address? I'm gonna get John, Fred, and Gary together. I'm gonna put some of your stories together on tape, and I'll send you my copies.
Bob, yeah.
Yeah.
And what name is it tonight?
Yeah. Where am I?
I got a book on the front. Look it up, man.
Yeah. It's like that farmer on farm work. I says, what's your address, Jack? And he says, oh, send it to Jack McGowan, Claude, Texas. He says, they know me here.
Get some thinking. Well, I don't like that.
He does.
Yeah.
He says, oh, they know me here. I said, don't you have a street address? Ah, oh, they know me.
Dog jumped up on the fence the other day. Cut himself on that wire that my dad put across the top so the dog would jump on me. Got an infection like in his foot. Didn't give him any antibiotics. We took him over and gave him a bunch of shots.
That's
three pills a day. That's my big problem.
Yeah.
I thought I'd just tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, poor attaboy. He looked pretty healthy to me. Yeah, you really. Well, no, Chris is your problem now.
Yeah.
Oh, he's getting 3 pills a day. He's okay.
I think he's taking 4 pills a day, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you're asking me to tell you these old stories he has too, you know. And all that does is stimulate him, you know.
Yeah.
He wants to get out and get crazier. You know? So there's not much I can do. Best thing to do to him is not tell him nothing. The thing I tell him just encourages him. Yeah, I think you put the wrong guy in charge of that. I tell him a couple old beach stories, and he's ready to go. Well, let's go down and hit it. You know?
Yeah.
Let's get the stag. You know all those guys down there. Then he goes down there and finds out I do know them all.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he's...